Welcome to another edition of From the Front Lines, where we discuss both the day-to-day and one-of-a-kind issues facing real estate managers.
Kyle Sheely is known for his crazy ideas, from a cardboard biking ship and a centaur bike to viral videos and a children's book. He's also worked with companies like KFC and Urban Outfitters, and he's speaking at the 2023 IREM Global Summit in Toronto. Welcome to the podcast, Kyle.
I'm excited to be here.
First, can you tell us a little about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a small town boy. Grew up in Rogersville, Missouri, which is just outside of Springfield. Grew up kind of running all over the country and playing in creeks. And then as I got older, I started a t-shirt company when I was in high school. And that sort of led to all these different adventures of chasing crazy ideas. And so that's what I've been doing ever since. And these days I've got, I'm an author, I'm a speaker, I travel around the country talking about creativity and innovation. And when I'm not doing that, I'm chasing a crazy idea or hanging out with my family.
At what point in your life did you first start coming up with these ideas? Was creativity something that came naturally to you, or do you think you've learned how to be creative?
That's a great question. I think it's a little bit of both. I strongly believe that creativity is something that is inherent in us as humans. I think that all humans are creative and have the capacity for creativity, which is somewhat of a controversial view. There are a lot of people that think like either you're creative or you're not. I don't believe that. But I also do acknowledge that creativity, like anything else, it's something that some people are better at and some people are worse at, and just naturally. And so basketball is a skill that is available to most people, but some people are naturally much better at basketball. And some people are like me. I should not legally be allowed in a gymnasium. I'm not a coordinated person like that. So I think I probably am naturally a little bit more creative minded than most people. But I also think that because of that, I've gravitated to it over the years and I've learned a lot about it and have become better at it as a result.
Can you take us through your creative process? Do you have a routine that helps you generate ideas?
Yeah, I can give you an idea of my creative process. I'll tell you, it's probably going to be maddening and frustrating to hear. There's a book that came out a long, long time ago by this guy named James Webb Young. He was an advertising writer. I mean, I want to say probably in like the 40s and 50s. And he had this book called A Technique for Producing Ideas. And it is the most maddening book to read because of how he's like, here's how you produce ideas. And it's exactly like, it's maddening, but also it's exactly how I produce ideas. And I say it's maddening because it's not really that helpful. It doesn't tell you how to produce ideas. What it says is the way that ideas work are you put a bunch of stuff into your head and then you just leave it alone. And then an idea will eventually kind of bubble to the surface. And that's kind of my technique, is I try to take in as wide of a variety of inputs as I can. And I just sort of trust the process that out of that, good ideas are going to come. I think a lot of people, and I fell into this myself early on, you want to hold on to the first idea that you have that's really good. And you go, oh my gosh, this is really great. I gotta save this for exactly the right moment. And the fear behind that is, I might never get another one of these. I might never have another good idea. But over the years, I've learned, no, ideas are going to keep coming. It's my job to shepherd the ideas that I have and to nurture them and to do the best I can at getting those ideas out into the world. And then also to be pulling in as many other good ideas as I can, and know that when I throw those into my brain, they'll kind of all jostle against the other ideas that are in there. And they'll also be shaped through my own, you know, twisted perspective and unique outlook as an individual. And so whatever comes out will be its own unique thing. And so sometimes, when you ask about process, it depends on what I'm trying to do. If there's a specific problem I'm trying to solve, then I will still take in a wide variety of inputs because that's just my general habit. I think that's generally really good. But I'll also look more specifically at, hey, what is the problem I'm trying to solve? And how have other people solved this problem? Or how have they solved problems that are like this? And how might those inputs and ideas shape my own creative process? And then you kind of just go in sort of concentric circles outward. It's like, oh, I didn't find it here. Well, what's one layer abstracted from that? Or what's another thing that's like this in a different industry? And so you take all that stuff in, but I have found that it's usually not, you read one thing, you go, oh, that's exactly what it is. There is this process of where it kind of has to compost and cook and ferment and whatever other analogy you want to use. And then you'll wake up in the middle of the night, or you'll be in the shower, you're taking a walk, and then all of a sudden you're like, that's it, that's the idea. And so that's sort of my creative process. It's not this 1, 2, 3, just do these things and the idea pops out the other side. There's a certain amount of kind of mystery to it, but I have found that it's enough of a process that I trust it, that the good ideas are going to come out the other side.
Your ideas have gone viral and become business enterprises. You've worked with different companies and written a children's book. How do you take that kernel of an idea and turn it into a results-oriented form of innovation?
That's a great question. And I think that there's this mythology out there, and this myth that about creative people, and I've had people say this about me before, where they'll say, oh, that person, they really think outside the box. And I understand the sentiment and where that comes from, but I actually think that's like a really bad description of what the creative process is like, because the truth about the creative process is it really thrives within constraints, within a box. And what it is you look at the constraints and then you try to figure out what's the most creative thing I can do within these constraints. And so when it comes to writing a children's book, for instance, there are some hard constraints within that process. Like, there is a specific number of pages that almost all creative or almost all children's books have. It's 32 pages. And there are sometimes they'll let you go higher than that, and sometimes that they'll kind of fudge it one way or another, but you're primarily expected to stay within that form. And there are limitations to how big the book can be and how many colors the book can have and all of these different things. And so creativity has to thrive within those constraints. So when I have an idea and I go, oh, this would make a really good business, or this would make a really good children's book, or I think this would be a great viral marketing campaign, I still have to think about it within the constraints of, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, if it's on this platform, then the video can't be longer than this many seconds, or it has to be vertical instead of horizontal. And so it becomes a process of taking this sort of like wild, crazy idea that you have, and then the rubber has to meet the road. And you go, okay, well, how does this interface with real life? And I think that is where a lot of the real creative work happens. People think of the creative work as like having the crazy idea. And that's the easy part. The actual creative work is, okay, how do I do that within the budget that I have, or within the timeline that I have, or with the team that I have? And oftentimes, that's where somebody who may not naturally think of themselves as creative will thrive. And that's why you often need kind of both groups of people. You need sort of the wild innovators, and then you need the people who go, okay, and now I'm going to open up a spreadsheet and figure out how we make that happen, or let's start translating those wild ideas into a calendar. And that's why you need all types of people.
You're good at getting people to pay attention and reaching an audience. Can you talk about what it takes to get people to connect to your message?
Yeah, I think that for whatever reason, I've always really gravitated to storytellers. And I think that there's a lot of data that says that as human beings, we're not really wired to remember facts. We're wired to remember stories. And so this kind of goes back to the creativity thing. I think I'm a naturally good storyteller, but I also work really hard to figure out what makes a good storyteller a good storyteller. And I try to take in as many good stories as I can. And I think anytime you can translate something from here's a list of cold facts to remember and translate those facts into here's a story that tells that exact same thing, you're way more likely for that story to resonate. And I think also it just kind of comes down to being personable and using humor and not taking yourself too seriously. Before I got into the corporate speaking market, I spent a decade plus speaking to teenagers. And so teenagers, the corporate market is pretty nice. Like, if the worst thing that they'll do is if you're not very good, they'll just sort of politely sit there and wait for you to be done. Teenagers will not do that. If you're not good, they will let you know that you're not good. They'll just stop paying attention. They'll wander off. They'll heckle you. They'll throw things. I mean, and I've watched all of those things happen to other speakers. I've had a few of those things happen to me. And so over time, I realized like, oh, you have to earn the right to be able to say whatever it is that you're going to say to them. You've got to kind of buy your way in. And for me, the way that I always did that was with humor, with teenagers and also with adults. Like, I found that any time that you're sitting in an audience and a guy gets up on stage and you were kind of required to be there, whether that's because you're in high school and it's an assembly or your boss sent you to this conference or whatever, there's kind of this certain level of like, kind of a wall that goes up in with the audience where they're like, oh, this guy's either going to, he's either going to try to ask me to do something I don't want to do, or he's going to tell me to stop doing something that I like doing. And so there's this wall that goes up, and I've learned that if you can get people to laugh, then that wall starts to kind of crumble a little bit, and then they go, oh, this guy's not so bad, and then they'll listen to what you have to say. So it's the spoonful of sugar that makes the medicine go down.
Have you ever had a hard time finding inspiration for new ideas? Maybe you felt exhausted or burned out or just wasn't feeling it for a while. What did you do to overcome that lack of inspiration?
Absolutely. I have, and so has anyone else that's ever tried to make anything happen in life. And anybody that tells you different is probably trying to sell you something. As human beings, like, the frustrating thing is we're not machines, and we want to be machines sometimes. We want to be able to, like, oh, every time I push this button, this outcome comes on the other side of it. But the truth is, we're big meat computers, and so we're bags of flesh and bone, and the things that happen in the world affect us, and can be the weather, or can be your relationships, or it can be what you ate or didn't eat, or how much sleep you did or didn't get. And so all of those things go into your general output and your general mood and your creative output and your creative mood. There's a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh where he talks about if I think it's lettuce he's talking about. He's like, if lettuce isn't growing well, you don't blame the lettuce. You try to figure out, why isn't it growing well? Did it not have enough water? Did it not have enough light? Did it, you know, was it planted in the wrong season? And I think that we should do that, one, with the people that are in our lives. We should give them more grace and understanding of, why is this person acting this way? But also in our own lives, when we go, oh man, I'm not having the output that I want, or I'm not feeling as energetic as I think I should. And you go, well, did I only drink, you know, cold brew all morning? Well, that's probably why I'm jittery. Or did I not get enough sleep last night, or whatever? And so when I've gone through times of creative drought, I guess you would call it, I try to give myself grace and patience and understanding, and figure out, why am I going through this? Oftentimes it's because I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself to try to generate something, and almost nothing good ever comes out of that. You know, creativity is kind of like, it's like that ghost in Mario, where if you look right at it, it freezes, and you kind of have to turn around and go do something else, and then it'll sort of sneak up on you. And so sometimes the best thing you can do is just stop trying to be creative and go take a walk or watch a movie or take a shower or go hang out with your friends. And then a lot of times when you let that pressure off, that's when the idea will come up.
And can you give us a preview of your IRM Global Summit appearance? What do you plan to talk about, and what are you most looking forward to in connecting with IRM members?
Yeah, so I'm so excited to come up to this event. And the talk that I'm going to be giving is about why we should chase crazy ideas. And it's about how you as an individual and within your organization can transform yourself and your group into what I call an idea factory. Even though we are not machines, I do believe there's enough of a process that if you put the right things in place, the natural output of that will be good ideas. And so I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about, what are the things that an idea needs? There are certain things that ideas just need in order to survive. And they're not complicated. They're not expensive. I'm not going to say, okay, and go buy this software or this tool or this book. It's very simple things. But if you don't put those things in place, in the same way that lettuce needs light and water and soil and all of those, ideas have needs. And then I'm also going to talk about, what are the things that kill an idea, and how do you watch out for those things in your organization? How do you protect from those things? And as I mentioned, I'm going to do all of that through storytelling. And so I'm going to tell you about some of my successes and some of my failures and some of the lessons that I learned along the way. I can promise that you'll laugh, you'll have a good time, but you'll also walk away with some real tangible, practical takeaways on, here's how creativity works, and here's how I can start implementing these things in my workplace and start chasing crazy ideas of our own.
Sounds great. We're looking forward to it. Thanks for joining us, Kyle.
Thank you, Todd.
Visit IRM.org for more knowledge to take on real estate management's most dynamic challenges. That's www.irem.org.